Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to today's program at the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Dr. David K. Okola, and I'm the chairperson of the Personal Growth Forum and your moderator for tonight's event. We also welcome our radio listeners, and we invite our audiences to visit us at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure and honor to introduce our distinguished speaker. Dr. Laura DeLizana is an expert in lasting happiness. She's a psychologist and personal coach, is an instructor at Stanford University, conducts workshops, and gives keynote speeches. She's developed a program called The Five Habits of Happiness and is writing a self-help book to help people increase their lasting happiness. Her specialty is in providing practical strategies that can be applied to daily life. Dr. DeLizana has published several articles and book chapters in the field of positive psychology. Previously, she was a staff psychologist and was awarded a postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford University. She earned a PhD in psychology at Boston University and conducted her doctoral dissertation under the mentorship of Dr. Ellen Langer at Harvard University. The workshop tonight is called Creating Happiness, The Five Habits that Make a Difference. Please help me welcome Dr. Laura DeLizana.
In the hospital delivery room, Dick stood by his wife's side. She had just given birth to their first child. Dick watched as his newborn son did something that looked like a push-up. But it wasn't a push-up. It was a seizure. Rick was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck, causing brain damage. He was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, and the doctors told the new parents that their son would never walk or talk. He would live in a vegetative state for the rest of his life. When Rick was just 6-8 months old, the doctors told his parents that they should put him in an institution. If you were Rick and Judy, what would you do? Would you leave your son in an institution? Or would you do what Dick and Judy did, which is take him home and choose to raise him as normally as possible? Dick and Judy chose to include their son in their daily life instead of exclude him. When they went to restaurants, they took Rick along. They enrolled him in school. They knew that he was just as smart as the other kids. So they convinced engineers at Tufts University to invent a computer that would enable Rick to communicate. One day, using this communication device, Rick said to his dad that he wanted to compete in a 5-mile benefit for an athlete who'd become paralyzed. His dad, Rick, pushed, his dad, Dick, pushed Rick in a wheelchair for 5 miles. They came in last, but later on that night, Rick said to his father, "Dad, when we're competing today, I didn't feel like I had a handicap." That inspired Dick to find other ways to compete in athletic events with Rick. He created and got a wheelchair that he could pull behind his bike. He created a boat that he could swim in front of and tied and Rick in the boat, and he would swim in front of it, and he could swim with Rick in the back so they could do triathlons. You might have heard of this father and son. They're known as Team Hoyt. And they are legends. They are legends because they have now competed in over 900 athletic events, including 66 marathons and 6 Ironmen. I think we would all agree that Judy, Dick, and Rick are heroes. Heroes are people who rise above adversity with courage and with vigor. These are heroes, not because of the 900 athletic events, but because they chose to not be victims of circumstance. They chose to overcome their circumstances, and this choice enabled them to triumph over tragedy. Researchers in positive psychology, the science of happiness, emphasize the importance of choice. That happiness depends not on what you achieve in life, not what you have in life, but happiness depends on how you respond to life. And this is what we're going to focus on today, because in every moment of your life, you have an awesome opportunity. You have an opportunity to create happiness. So I'd like to pause right now. Let's put a question out into the audience. What are some of the challenges that you face as you are on your path to create even more lasting happiness? Some people are faced with illness. Some people have loved ones with illnesses. Others have busyness that plagues them, and other things as well. Anyone? How many people have too much stress in their lives? A lot of us, pretty much all of us, right? Well, I'd like you to think about what challenges you, because later on, we're going to brainstorm some responses, possibly some solutions to some of these challenges. In this program, we are going to focus on how you can bring more lasting happiness into your life. And we're going to focus with that by using the 5 habits of happiness. The first habit is appreciate. Second, connect. Third, dig deeper. Change your perspective. And the last, let go. These 5 habits of happiness emerged as a result of my personal journey and professional mission that began early one morning, nearly 2 decades ago. Perhaps you've been there, sitting on top of a mountain, when you realize that your life is going in the wrong direction. That's where I was. I was sitting on top of Mount Sinai in Egypt. I had dropped out of college, and I was soul-searching like a true Californian. It was sunrise, and I was looking out over a sea of golden mountaintops. The sun was peeking over the horizon. But amidst this beauty, I felt uneasy. I felt like I was trudging through life, but I knew that I should be dancing. I didn't know how to change, but I knew I had to. So in that moment, I made a pact. I vowed to find my path to lasting happiness, and when I did, I would teach what I learned to others. It was a quest, and I listened to everyone who had anything to say about happiness. From taxi drivers and Buddhist monks, to Maasai warriors, and the top researchers at Harvard and Stanford. I studied for my PhD in clinical psychology, and I reflected on the lessons from my own life. Undergoing major surgery, living with chronic arthritis, a dear friend's death, and good old-fashioned heartache. I used to and still do hole up in a cabin in the woods in Oregon without TV or internet, with piles of books, and I pore over them looking for themes that emerge from religious leaders, social leaders, the great philosophers, and even pop psychologists like Tony Robbins. Themes did emerge. As you know, messages repeat themselves over and again. These themes I put together in an action plan as nuggets of wisdom. And these are the 5 habits of happiness. These are ways to respond to no matter what you face. And like any habit, they can be learned. But they require practice. And it's worth it, because everyone can increase their happiness even more. Turns out that happiness not only feels good, it's good for you. Happy people live longer, have better jobs, are better problem solvers, stay married longer, feel more physically attractive, and are more altruistic. They're good for our society. But there's a common mistake that many people make. And this mistake is focusing on the outside rather than on the inside when they're trying to increase their lasting happiness. There's a researcher at UC Riverside, Sonia Lyubomirsky, who estimates that only 10% of our happiness is due to our circumstances. Even life-altering circumstances. Both lottery winners and paraplegics, within a year of their life-altering experience, winning the lottery ticket or becoming paralyzed, return to average levels of happiness. Finding the love of your life is not going to increase your lasting happiness that much over time. Within 2 years of marriage, most newlyweds return to their previous levels of happiness. And money does buy happiness, but only until you reach the poverty line. After that, there's not much added benefit. So whether you make $50,000 or $500,000, it's not going to have that big of an impact on your lasting happiness. In a study of the members of the Fortune 500, they were only a smidgen happier than the person with average income. In the second half of the last century, in this country, wealth increased tremendously, but not happiness. In our current economic climate, what does this mean? Everywhere, all over the news, you see concerns and worries about financial struggles. Well, according to the research, probably most people are going to maintain their basic outlook. Happy people are going to stay happy, and unhappy people are just going to have more fodder for their unhappiness. And they will probably see it truly as an economic downturn. So if circumstances don't matter much for our lasting happiness, should we give up on our hopes and our dreams? Of course not. The key is that happiness is a process, not a place. So actually, you're free to go after your dreams because you are liberated from your circumstances. Whether you win or lose, you win. I love the way that the author, Margaret Lee Runbeck, says this. She says, happiness is not a state to arrive at. Happiness is a manner of traveling. So it's more about the journey than the goal, because happiness is found in the journey to the goal. We love having challenges, and we need them, particularly when they're meaningful challenges. But we like small, big challenges as well. It's getting to the top of the mountain that's fun. Sure, the view at the top is great, but at least half the journey is getting there. The secret to happiness is happiness depends not on what you have or achieve in life. Happiness is how you respond to life. And I bet you know this secret. And I think Judy, Dick, and Rick knew this as well. The question is, do you live it? Because knowing is not enough. Doing is what produces results. So go after your dreams with zest. Go for it. Cultivate happiness along the way. And that brings us to the first habit, which is the habit of appreciate. A very simple yet often overlooked way to increase your happiness. The habit of appreciate is not changing a thing. It's just shifting your attention to the positives that already exist in your life. So when you look at this picture, what do you see? Do you see the cracks and the desert? Or do you see the flower? The question I have for you is, do you feel a sense of abundance in your life? Or do you feel a sense of scarcity? Feel the riches that you have in your life, with good or bad circumstances, less than perfect even. Still, find the pearls. And this will help you, the habit of appreciate, get even more out of those circumstances to bring that 10% level up much higher. Tonight we're focused on building skills so that it's not just knowing, but you can walk out of here doing. So how do you build the habit of appreciate? Well, of course, there are many ways. Tonight I'm going to give you one. Turn up the amplitude is the goal. Savor your simple pleasures. In a study at University of Pennsylvania by Marty Seligman, the godfather of positive psychology, they looked at what would happen in just 1 week of turning your attention to the good things that already exist in your life. So over 1 week, people recorded the 3 good things that happened to them each day and their role in creating them. And what they found is that after 1 week, happiness levels were higher and depression levels were lower. But what's even more interesting about this is that 6 months later, happiness levels were still higher than before that 1 week. What this suggests is that there are small actions that we can take, very small changes that can have a big impact. And that's what this is about, is finding the little ways that you can weave into your life every day. And that is how you will increase your lasting happiness even more. So I ask you now, think for yourself. Today, let's start. What are 3 good things that happened to you? and what was your role in creating them? Maybe you had a hug goodbye from your child. Did you notice? Did you savor it? Maybe you had a great cup of coffee. Did you taste it? Did you love it? Maybe you got a call from a friend. Maybe you got praise at work. Notice the little things and notice your role in creating them. For example, a call at work, you might say, I didn't do anything to get that call. That call came to me. But actually, I bet you developed a friendship with this person. I bet that you have called him or her before and have a reciprocal type of relationship. That's your role in it. You took the time, perhaps, to talk with them. So find ways that you can weave the habit of appreciate to turn up the amplitude on your gratitude in little ways in your life. Like, if you have children, maybe you'll create a bedtime ritual around, what are the three pearls from your day today? I know parents who do this, and their kids love it. Maybe over dinner, instead of just letting the conversation wander onto the negative things, because negativity can be like a magnet to our attention, intentionally bring into the conversation the good things that happened today. There's a practice exercise that I use with my clients and in workshops. It's the three good things exercise. And I have this for you in the back table outside the room. It's also on my website, choosinghappiness.com, where you will find exercises for all of the habits so that you can practice bringing intention, sometimes just for a week, to create a habit. Habit two. This is the gem of happiness. Connect. We are social animals. Relationships are the number one contributor to our happiness. In one study, of very happy people, the happiest 10%, they all had one thing in common. And I'm sure by now, you can guess that it wasn't health or wealth or living in sunny California. It was having satisfying relationships. The Hoyts did a beautiful job of exercising this habit, I think. Their decision to include Rick, not exclude him from their daily life, was about connection. And in modern society, this is a particularly important habit to bring attention to. Because often our technology can get in the way of our connection. Communication technology can distance us, not connect us. So digital contact like cell phones, texting, and emails can be great tools for increasing connection. But they can also take away our face-to-face contact. So be mindful in using that, our technologies like cell phones in particular, and emails. Build the habit of connect. There are, again, many ways. The bottom line is find opportunities for what I like to call everyday intimacy and moments of connection. Because oftentimes we focus on our main relationships, but we overlook the ones like with acquaintances or coworkers, or even the clerk at the grocery store, saying hello, how are you, and actually listening. So the way tonight that I give to you to increase lasting happiness with the habit of connect is to do small acts of kindness. John Gottman at the University of Washington, he's one of the top researchers in the world in relationships. says that after decades of his research, a conclusion that he draws is that the secret to a happy marriage is doing small acts of kindness. Think for yourself. What acts of kindness did you receive lately? Did someone do a small favor for you? Or left you a thank you note? Or a text message that said, "Hey, good to see you last night. Let's get together again." And ask yourself, how can you do even more small acts of kindness to bring them into your life with more intention? Because so often we don't write the thank you note. It's kind of a forgotten art. We forget to take time to notice people around us and what we can do for them. Instead, too often the question today is, what can be done for me? Turning the attention to the small things that you can do to enrich your relationships. There's a practice exercise that I really love called the "I noticed you at your best" exercise. This is also in the back of the room at the table. And this is about combining the habit of appreciate with the habit of connect and actually expressing what you appreciate about the people around you, specifically how you noticed someone's strength or that a coworker perhaps added value to your meeting or helped you out in a way that was really a demonstration of their strengths and their abilities and how you admired it. Small ways to increase connection in our lives. The third habit is the habit, dig deeper. This habit is about living your life from the inside out. It's about bringing depth to your life. The small joys and the fun times are great and an important part of lasting happiness. Those bring breadth to life. Dig deeper is about bringing depth. We all have a finite number of days on this planet. Do you ever wonder how many days you have left? So ask yourself, how will I spend them? And bring intention to how you spend them. Because the greatest tragedy would be to get the end of your life and feel, man, my life just didn't really matter. I didn't really own my life. Someone else did. So ask yourself today, right now, does my life reflect on the outside what's on the inside? So construct your life intentionally. Don't let external demands, convenience take over. Get back in the driver's seat. I love the quote. I have this in my home on the wall. There is no set path. Just follow your heart.
We'd like to remind our audience, listening audience, that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Dr. Laura Delezana giving her workshop and talk on creating happiness, the five habits that make a difference.
Building the habit of dig deeper. Small ways, tangible ways, real ways that you can bring meaning into your life. The overall message is, spend time doing work and leisure activities that matter to you, that you enjoy, and that you're good at. And do these things every day. Weave them into your work activities. Weave them into your social activities. So focus right now for a moment on how to build even more meaning in your life. How to put your values in action. Too often we think of values as some abstract comment. But think about how to put your values in action. So I ask you this question. With the work that you're doing right now, how is your work in the service of something greater than yourself? For example, the grocery store clerk, well, that person is the last person in a long line, a team, really, of people who are helping us to bring food on our table to feed our communities. My wish for every grocery store clerk is that he or she realizes this. It's an important job. It's a crucial job. Electrical engineers are innovators, and they help us become more productive. So think for yourself about how your job, or how you spend your days, how that is in the service of something greater. Often we think about this in terms of raising a family. But think outside the box and notice how what you do matters. A practice exercise for this is called the MPS, meaning, pleasure, and strengths. It brings your attention to the question, what am I good at? What do I love, and what's fun for me? So that you can find the overlap and use that as a guide when thinking about how you're going to spend your days, whether in work or fun. So these first three habits, appreciate, connect, and dig deeper, are particularly good at increasing positivity. They can be very useful for that. So I want you to think about the role of emotions for a moment. Do you ever think that emotions have a purpose? Emotions. Emotions put us in motion. Positive emotions are like the sail on a sailboat. They pull us forward. They bring us to our hopes and our dreams. They motivate us and energize us and expand our vision. But negative emotions also have a very important role. They help us navigate. They help us feel that something is wrong. They help us know that it's time to change something. They're like the keel on the underside of a sailboat. They prevent us from toppling over and falling down. They help us navigate through the storm. But too often, negative emotions become the storm. We get overwhelmed and hijacked by them. And while they're helpful, they can get out of control very easily. And there's actually some neurological evidence to suggest that we're wired to pay more attention and to be more affected by our negative emotions than our positive emotions. They helped us to survive and keep us safe. But both are crucial. The second two habits are about keeping the negative emotions, the distressing emotions, at a useful level. Change your perspective and let go are about decreasing the negativity in your life so that you can use negative emotions when they come up as they were meant to serve you, which is to help you navigate. The fourth habit, change your perspective. Because, all right. All right. Well, the fourth habit, change your perspective, is about where you look, what you focus on. A blank screen. So change your perspective is about paying attention to where you focus, because where you focus is what you will do, and it will also affect how you feel. Change perspective is the habit of opening your mind to possibility, because beliefs can be empowering or they can be disempowering. Think back to a situation in which you felt that things were going wrong and how it may have captured your attention. Change your perspective. One way to build this habit is by creating optimism. Now, optimism is not about having rose-colored glasses on or about thinking just good thoughts. Creating optimism is about being a realist, not just an idealist. And what it is about finding the cracks in the wall of impossibility. Finding the cracks in the wall, looking to the possible of the seemingly impossible. I think the Hoyts did a really great job of this. They saw Rick's abilities, not his disabilities. Optimism is the seed of success. The question that I ask you is not, can you reach your dreams, thrive in an economic downturn, but how can you? Because when you ask, how can I do this, then you are in a much better place to find solutions. Like Henry Ford said, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. So do not ask, can I? That is a dead-end question. I bet if the Hoyts sat at the dinner table and said, honey, do you think that Rick could compete in a marathon? The first thing that would come to their mind is, no, of course he can't. He cannot walk. The question is how. And that leads to creative solutions like manufacturing a boat that Dick can swim in front of, a wheelchair that he can pull behind his bike. That type of question, how can he speak, led them to convincing the engineers to invent a communication device. The last habit is let go. This, I do believe, is the habit that you will be working on for the rest of your life. It is hard to let go. We are really good at looking out in the world and trying to control things. It makes sense. If you want something, go out and get it, right? If you want the light switch to be on, all you do is flip the switch. We are used to moving things around in our external environment, but when it comes to people, when it comes to the past, when it comes to the future, these are things we cannot so easily use our will to control. You may be familiar with what's referred to as the Serenity Prayer. This, I believe, sums up the habit of let go very nicely. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to to know the difference. How do you build the habit of let go? Well, let's be clear about what letting go is and is not. A lot of people say, I don't want to accept my circumstance. My circumstances are unacceptable. The Holocaust was unacceptable. And that's true. However, no matter what the circumstances, even tragedies and atrocities, we are in a much better place to change if we first acknowledge what is, that the atrocities are happening, rather than refusing to believe or denying reality or saying, but it shouldn't happen, but it's not fair. While this may be a very natural first response, eventually being effective lies in asking the question, what can I do now? Letting go is an open posture, hand posture to reality. It's saying, here we are. Now what am I going to do? So the question is, what can you do now? Well, with the past, you cannot change it. Yes, you can learn from it. The Hoyts could not change the fact that their son was born with cerebral palsy. Can plan for the future, plan for a different outcome, a better future. We can't control the outcome. So the important step is to take action in the present. Focus on the process, not the outcome. Learn from the past, plan for the future, and do in the present. This is why the habit of let go is about empowerment. Another way to say this is, once the cards are dealt, play them as well as you can. A practice exercise for this is writing your hero story. This was created by Fred Luskin, a professor at Stanford University. And you'll find this story in his books and online at choosinghappiness.com. It's a transformative process to think about how you've been a hero, triumphed over tragedy or unfortunate circumstances. So the five habits of happiness are: appreciate, turning towards the positive; connect, really investing in those small ways to enrich your relationships; dig deeper, living your life from the inside out; change your perspective, creating optimism, perhaps noticing where your focus, not underestimating the power of your thoughts; and let go, acceptance and empowerment. Be the change you want to be is what increasing lasting happiness is about to me. Because I wonder what would happen if more people were happier, were truly happy. If enough people in your city, your neighborhood, your community, in our nation, in our world, were truly happier, what would it be like? I believe in my heart that the problems between nations are caused because of the chaos and unhappiness, confusion of each individual who makes up those nations. Whether it's the small unit of a family or the world societies, focusing on what you can do to be the change you want to be can have a huge impact. And the truth is we have no idea what it would be like to have a happier society. So, go out and build the habits of lasting happiness and support each other on their paths to lasting happiness. Bring them along. The challenge I have for you tonight is go out and create a life in which you do not just walk, you do not just run, but you learn to fly.
Our special thanks to Dr. Laura Dellazana for her comments here today at the Commonwealth Club of California. Again, my name is Dr. David Okla, the chairperson of the Personal Growth Forum, and I'm moderating today's audience question period. Doctor, we have a good amount of questions, so let's begin. Do we have any questions? Need to write it. Yeah, go ahead and ask it. Could you repeat that question, please?
So the question is, how can we be rich and happy? You know, there's no need to be martyrs about this happiness thing. Go out, pursue your dreams, get rich, do whatever drives you. The key is to put more of your energy into how you go about your life. So it might mean that once you get the $450,000 or $1 million, is that what you said? Add a few zeros. That just attend to how what you're doing then. If you fall into the illusion that simply making that money is going to bring you lasting happiness, that's a mistake that we do see out there in the world. So what we know is that projects, goals, challenges are really exciting for us. There's a concept referred to as flow, in which we engage in challenging endeavors using our strengths, where you lose a sense of time and it becomes very exciting. You feel obsessed with it sometimes. This is wonderful for us, and this is an important part of happiness. So trying to earn money in the stock market can be a project that is very exciting. And what's great about investing in the stock market is you get feedback, right? So that's great for creating a flow experience. You want to know how you're doing. Are you doing better or worse? So there's really the key is that it doesn't matter what you're going after if it drives you, feeds you. The important piece is that you pay attention to how you're living your life. Are you appreciating the money when it comes in? Are you using the money in ways that feel meaningful for you? So, does it stay in the bank? Or do you buy a lovely house in Montana with a personal jet that you bring all of your friends and family in once a month to have gatherings? That's going to increase your happiness level. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong. Money is not the evil empire. It's go out and do it. Just don't fall into the illusion that simply having it is going to make the difference. Work hard. Love your job.
Who, I have another question, who is the happiest person you know? And why are they so darn happy?
The happiest person I know, and why are they so happy? Well, okay. The happiest person I think that I know of is probably the Dalai Lama. He says, this is remarkable to me, that he does maintain equanimity in his life. It's not that he doesn't become angry. He says that he gets negative emotion. It's just that they come in a flash and they're gone. Like lightning and boom, they're gone. So it's not, again, that we don't have negative emotions. We need them. He needs to be upset for a moment about how his people are being treated so that he can focus his energy and do something. And why? Well, for him, what works is, I think he exercises all of the habits very nicely. He gets an A on that. And a method that he uses to get centered, to find his focus and his purpose, is meditation, which is focusing inward. He says, I've heard that if he does not do meditation for like 4 days, then he starts to notice himself getting imbalanced. Average person, just like us, he just has really put intention and exercised his happiness muscle, we might say. So the key is that meditation may not be it for you, but find ways that do work for you.
I have another question. How do you balance your happiness versus trying to make everyone else happy?
Okay, the people-pleaser syndrome can be a real trap. So this is about balance and clarity. Sometimes we do things for other people because we feel that we should, or that's what a good person does, when actually you're stewing inside, or you're not saying something, not expressing that this is actually like a little appreciation, a thank you would be nice. So this is about having your own clarity to set boundaries and limits on what you can do. We all have 24/7, but we only have 24/7. So it's important to take time for yourself, of course. Relationships are, as we talked about earlier, the number one contributor, it seems, by a lot of research, to our happiness. That doesn't mean, however, that they are the only thing to be done. And in fact, if you are doing something for other people that is making you mad, you're probably not actually enriching that relationship. So a lot of times I think the confusion comes in because we follow the shoulds rather than being true to ourselves. And a solution to this, I think, is two things. One is get clear for yourself about why you're doing this and the impact it's going to have on them and on you, and make a decision if that's something that is healthy for you and for them. And the second solution, I think, can be having a conversation about it. So getting clear and compromising with the other person. Someone may ask you to do a really big favor for them, and you may feel pressure to do it. And if you're not clear with yourself, you might just go ahead and do it and then be upset after. Or you might say, you know what? I value helping other people, and I want to feed this relationship by being of assistance, helping this person out. That's what I value, and this would be an act of connection for me. However, I can't do it right now. Maybe I could do it later. Or I could do part of it, but not all of it. So engage in a compromise and learn how to say no, maintaining that connection, and learn how to say yes in ways that maintain the connection.
Another question. What is the effect of chronic pain on happiness?
Chronic pain is a huge stressor. There, we see this in both our research studies, but also, I mean, you can imagine for yourself that having pain, having your body tell you that it hurts is not fun. So, this is one of those situations that one let go applies to. Focus on where you can control. Find your control in managing some degree of the symptoms. Ellen Langer has a book out that just came out called Counterclockwise. And this is about finding ways that you can influence your health, not necessarily changing them. Chronic pain is one of those conditions that oftentimes cannot be changed, remedied. However, how you cope with it is going to make all the difference. So finding moments when the pain is not as intense and really being with that moment of enjoying your freedom from pain in that moment, rather than seeing chronic pain as the word implies, chronic and stable, that actually with all of our conditions that are physically manifested, most of them, let's say, there's tiny fluctuations in these physical sort of conditions, like they're muscular, and even with asthma, there's certain situations that bring it on more or less. Certain asthma attacks are worse, and some are not as bad. So finding fluctuation, it's about finding opportunities within your condition and also appreciating that it's a stressor. It's a challenge. There's no two ways about it. So giving yourself some credit, perhaps, for overcoming that adversity, not changing it, but to managing it and being heroic within difficult situations. It's a great question because there are a lot of things we cannot change. But it's how you become a hero within that situation.
We only have a minute and a half, and so you got about 30 seconds for this one.
Okay.
Happiness, should we strive for personal or universal?
Let's go for it all. Absolutely.
Thank you.
However, it requires two approaches, I think. One, personal, is clearly focusing on yourself internally, from the inside out. Turn up the volume on your own intuition on what will bring you lasting happiness. And universal happiness? Well, we really don't know a lot about universal happiness. However, we do know that there are contagion effects between people. If you smile, someone else smiles. At a neurological level, we have mirror neurons. We are social beasts. Mirror neurons, when you sneeze, someone else sneezes. When you yawn, someone else sneezes. I mean, sometimes they sneeze when you yawn. You never know. They yawn. And when you smile or grimace, they do the same. We have a social effect. We are pack animals. So universal, let's go for it. Let's see what we can do.
Again, our special thanks to Dr. Laura Dellizano for her comments here today. Today's presentation was called Creating Happiness, the 5 Habits That Make a Difference. We also like to thank our audience here at the club and as well as the radio audience at home. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California commemorating its 106 year of enlightened discussion is now adjourned.